CRJ225. This is your podcast for weeks 11 and 12. We are going to discuss victimless offenses, breach of peace. We'll talk a little bit about gangs and drugs and loitering. Then we'll get into our week 12 topics, obstructing justice, bribery, perjury, and just a brief mention of Homeland Security. As you know by now, criminal laws are intended to restrict or regulate unwanted behavior and actions. Many of these criminal laws that we've reviewed to this point in the semester are meant to protect other individuals, victims of crime. But as you may have noticed as you explored other course materials and the Illinois criminal statutes, there are a number of laws that criminalize consensual behavior or actions where there is no victim per se. These are things you're familiar with. These are things that cross into everyday life that you may have seen other people experience, either through the news, through the newspaper, through television news, through family or friends. These are laws that might include offenses for recreational drug use, solicitation of prostitution, possession of other contraband. A victimless crime is generally defined as an illegal criminal act that does not have an identifiable victim. This generally includes actions that only involve the perpetrator or something voluntary between consenting adults. Victimless crimes are also known as crimes against the state. We could argue that there's no such thing as a victimless crime because some of these laws, past and present, criminalize behavior based on opinions about morality, essentially. For this reason, there is no universal or general definition of a victimless crime, similar to what you have experienced with many of the other crimes you've studied this semester. Each of us may have a different opinion about whether a criminal offense is actually a victimless crime. We may disagree if the action is a crime at all. But as we've discussed many times now in the first 10 weeks of this course, for those of us going into law and justice, it doesn't really matter if we agree it's a crime at all. That's not our role. Some common examples of actions that are often called victimless crimes include prostitution or solicitation of a prostitute, assisted suicide, trespassing, recreational drug use, drug possession, gambling, public intoxication, possession of contraband, public nudity, homelessness, and we'll get into these a little bit in this podcast. Now, there's often a fine line between what is considered a crime or not, and over time, as morals or society shifts, so does the focus on what is or isn't a crime and to what extent. For example, when I first graduated from Illinois Central College with my police science degree, remember that was the law enforcement degree for those of you in the law enforcement program, that's what we called it prior to back in the old days. But at that time, police in Peoria were arresting people for gambling in public. If a police officer saw individuals gambling on a street corner, sometimes people would play dice out in the neighborhood for money. they may get cited or arrested. Sometimes arrests occurred in not so public places. I remember a raid on an upper floor of a well-known locksmith shop on Sheridan Road that resulted in the arrest of several prominent Peorians who were all at the establishment to gamble. Not long after that, we had a gambling boat, originally docked in Peoria, now docked in East Peoria. And fast forward to today, many of my favorite establishments have slot machines, poker machines, video, whatever they're called. I don't frequent those. Right there in the establishment. You can gamble on your phone. It's commonplace. It's legal. It's found everywhere, and it's regulated by the state. As long as it's gambling that is condoned and regulated by the state, it's legal. Many of those other activities still go on, and depending on where you are, may be illegal, right? Go ahead and check the Illinois statutes. But how much of that do you think gets enforced these days when it's so legal in so many places? We could say the same for cannabis, and that's one that you'll be able to talk about because that came about in your age. 20 years ago, we sent individuals to prison for possessing relatively small amounts of cannabis compared to things we discuss today. And today, well, that's your story to tell because you lived through it. Solicitation of prostitution is legal in many countries and in parts of Nevada. However, in the rest of the U.S., solicitation is a sex act or solicitation of a sex act for money is against the law. You may have heard me tell stories in this or other classes like evidence or administration of justice about my time as a municipal hearing officer. One of the first vehicle impound ordinances in the region was one that was focused on curbing solicitation of prostitution. And the police would act as decoys. They would pretend to be prostitutes in an area where prostitutes were known to hang out. And at the time, this is before cell phones and the internet, and prostitutes would walk around in certain areas. Johns, people interested in picking up a prostitute, typically a male. I imagine there might have been some Janes, but typically a male, a John, would drive around the area, and then usually gesture to the prostitute by holding up their hands and flashing, you know, two full sets of fingers meant $10, twice meant $20. See if the person, the prostitute, was working. And that's solicitation. And in Peoria, they would impound the vehicle of these people if they solicited the prostitute. We also had programs or ordinances that initially focused on the same thing when drug sales were essentially on street corners. Now, cell phones and the internet have changed both of those types of businesses and sent them further underground. With prostitution, I'm sure you're aware, and if you aren't, you really should be, that a major concern with prostitution is human trafficking. Human trafficking. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Dr. White has a course. Take it if you can fit it into your schedule, but go and educate yourself. Think about if that individual was your daughter, your sister, your cousin, your friend, someone forced into, and that's the real issue with prostitution. Much later in my career as a municipal hearing officer, I had the occasion of having a case come before me concerning a massage parlor and some business practices of that massage parlor, and it ended up with me on an ordinance concern regarding the classification of the business and the license to do business as a legitimate massage parlor. But underlying that, or actually overhanging that, was a very serious investigation, and my part of the scenario or the case that was before me was relatively insignificant and intended solely to harass an individual in a different way who was running what I'm probably pretty sure was prostitution related to human trafficking. So if you don't know what that is, go look. There's a strong argument that criminalizing sex work does not eliminate the act, it drives it underground. When treated as a crime, sex workers may be less willing to come forward to report more serious offenses like violence or sexual assault or being kidnapped and forced to work as a prostitute. Go back and look at our discussion on kidnapping. And that's where it's gone. So be aware. And if you're not aware, get aware. In preparation for your assignment this week, go to the Illinois statutes on prostitution. I linked those to the course materials. And read that statute. Think about what I just said regarding human trafficking and go back to your recollection of kidnapping when we studied kidnapping a short time ago. Assisted suicide is one of the things I mentioned. You may or may not be aware. If you're not, you should become aware that it's sometimes desired by people who are suffering from a terminal or debilitating illness that they're able to end their own life. Some of these people look to suicide, and some are unable to follow through with the act of suicide themselves because of their condition, their physical limitations, and being able to pull that off in a safe, way. In states with assisted suicide laws, people can make the decision to die on their own terms instead of continuing to suffer. But in most states, suicide and assisted suicide is against the law. According to Illinois, and I cited the statute in the materials, withholding or withdrawal of death-delaying procedures from a qualified patient or in accordance with the terms of the act that I cited, or a healthcare agency, is not suicide, homicide, or murder. So essentially, it has to be measures that are approved under the guidance of and within some sort of recognized and licensed medical care. It is legal in Illinois to withhold food and fluids from a patient who is dying and/or for the patient to refuse medical treatment if it's deemed to be delaying death. Now, that's different than suicide, I guess, and some of you may have experienced this with loved ones or family friends who were at that point end of life, there's no way to get around whatever they're facing, and that's a choice they make. That's different than the suicide situation. And this is a hot button one. This is one of those moral ones. This is one of those ones where people have strong feelings. I'll tell you straight up. I have strong feelings against suicide or assisting suicide. Now, if it's a medical condition and it's a known medical condition and they're in pain and suffering and there is no way out and it's all of those things within our statutes, I don't have a problem with that because I've seen that as well. But with suicide, where someone takes their life because they don't want to continue life and they don't have those debilitating conditions or terminal diseases or pain in that way. My personal deal is I've seen the wave of suffering that's left for all the people that are still there after the suicide. So I use this as a little commercial because in our line of work, suicide rates are up there compared to other lines of work. Know the hotline. Know the reasons. Don't be afraid to seek therapy, counseling. And avoid that because, and anybody you know who may be in that area, do what you can to get them to avoid it because all that happens is they escape, but they leave behind so much pain that just ripples in the people that they've left behind for years, for the rest of their lives. Moving on to another bright topic, homelessness. I never promised this was going to be a happy course or a happy week, right? But homelessness, we need to consider it. It's a major concern in many states. The simple response has been to criminalize the actions associated with homelessness instead of actually addressing the underlying issues. Most of these offenses are adopted and enforced through municipalities, local ordinances. They may include laws against loitering, public drunkenness, begging, lying down in public, living in vehicles, sleeping in public, food sharing, all sorts of things that local governmental entities and sometimes states come up with. But for those of our graduates who are out on the streets and dealing with this every day and seeing those people, they'll tell you that homelessness is a result of substance abuse, mental health conditions, domestic violence, or even unexpected medical emergencies. It's from people going in a hole that they sometimes contributed to and sometimes had no control over. And they'll tell you that criminalizing homelessness is a temporary measure that does not do anything to help those in need. Even if that individual gets taken to jail, they end up back on the street at some point. Enforcing or dealing with this issue is in this way, would not be the preferred approach of anyone I know in law enforcement or the justice system. But if you go into law enforcement, you can expect to be called to investigate and deal with calls related to this list. I will tell you that our graduates, my friends, the people I know, they deal with this as best they can with compassion, okay? They're not out there to clink somebody up and take them to jail because they're homeless. As long as someone is not breaching the peace, causing anyone else harm, if it's a matter of someone's called in to complain that they're hanging out in front of their business or they're in their neighborhood or whatever, they'll do what they can to facilitate helping that person who's struggling and eliminating the issues. So they play social worker, which, is another one of those things that we can talk about in a whole podcast, but we're not going to get into here. Gangs and drugs and loitering. So Peoria has some ordinances that I linked to the materials that focus on loitering by gangs or loitering for drug sales. Now, again, these are kind of historical, right? Because prior to cell phones and the internet and the ability to communicate in the ways we're able to communicate now, people who were in criminal gangs, gangs set up to profit off of crime, they communicated out in the open. They had to. Same for drug sales, as I mentioned earlier. So take a look at those ordinances. Loitering is essentially hanging around. Okay? Hanging around. Just standing out on a corner in front of your house, watching the traffic. You could be accused of loitering. So let's talk about breach of peace. Breach of peace in Illinois is known as disorderly conduct. The Illinois disorderly conduct statute is a catch-all statute aimed at punishing individuals who disturb the peace by causing undue alarm, annoyance, or an invasion of privacy. And I linked the statute, so go please and read the statute. That statute is designed to protect society's interest in enjoying a safe and peaceful community. Under the statute, a person is criminally liable for disorderly conduct when he or she knowingly does any act in such unreasonable manner as to alarm or disturb another and to provoke a breach of peace. This provision is intentionally vague so as to apply it to a wide variety of disturbances. Some common examples of actions prosecuted under this provision include public intoxication, public urination, public brawls, violent protests and riots, loud shouting or obscenities, loud music, or disrupting a public assembly. This statute requires the prosecutor to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant A, committed the act, B, in a manner that was so unreasonable that it C, alarmed or disturbed at least one other person, D, and provoked a breach of peace, and finally, E, the defendant knowingly committed this act. In addition to the general but vague concern for breach of peace, the statute goes on to specifically define and prohibit acts related to false fire alarms. So pulling a fire alarm, as you may have recall, happened at a school in the area recently. False bomb reports. We had that at Illinois Central College at one point. School-related threats or violence or destruction. False reports of crime or safety issues. You see that come up every once in a while where someone will call in and make some false claim of a crime in progress or a crime that has occurred to harass whoever they've called against. Calling 911 without a valid reason. False reports to DCFS, Department of Children and Family Services. So in other words, false reports about the safety or condition of a child. Typically, again, intended to harass. And for those of you who are going to have me for family law in the spring or already had me last spring, something we see in increasing numbers in child custody or contested child custody cases. False reports regarding nursing homes, mental hospitals, or intellectual disabilities facilities about neglect or abuse. False requests for an ambulance, false reports of violence, Invasions of Privacy and a Peeping Tom. I don't really like that name for obvious reasons, but somebody going around and trying to, you know, look in your windows, essentially. And now we've even taken that to, you know, somebody trying to hijack your in-home security system or something like that, or in-store, I guess. And collection agency harassment, aimed not at harassing the collection agency, but collection agencies being in trouble for harassing you or someone else outside of what they're allowed to do under the law. In following our discussion of municipal ordinances, you will find similar local laws allowing for fines for many of these same activities or for breach of peace in general. I eventually, in my hearing officer years of service, we got around to some municipalities who would, rather than arrest individuals for getting into a, you know, little fisticuffs, they would use their discretion to, under their ordinance, fine those individuals. In this particular case, I sat in the City Hall at Pekin and heard those cases, and in the window behind me was the county jail. And more than a couple times on charges of assault, battery, and affray, where, say, two neighbors who may have been drinking separate or together decide they're going to duke it out over something dumb, the police would arrive and they would figure out that, you know, we could take them to jail and they could have the criminal charges, but then they're not going to go to work. And eventually they're going to come back here and live next to each other. So we're going to write it on a municipal ticket. We're going to separate them. And sometimes they had both the municipal ticket and the criminal charge, but they would end up in front of me facing a fine. And they would realize that they were lucky that they weren't going to the jail, because I'd point to the jail behind me. Sometimes I'd ask, you ever been to that place? And knowing that most of the time, somebody who's going to get in a fist fight in their 40s, like they were 10, has probably been to the jail. But then we'd have a talk about, you know, breaching the peace, what it costs. Cost in police services, right? If I have to have a police officer go out to someone's house to tell them to stop acting like a 10-year-old, it costs. It costs all of us. It costs all the taxpayers. It takes that car out of service for something dumb when they may be needed for something serious. So the people would get fined. That's also on the table in this area. If you want, you can stop now and come back to this and fast forward to this point, because now I'm going to move into week 12 and obstructing justice, bribery, and perjury. Obstructing justice. In Illinois, it's committed when someone with an intent to prevent the apprehension of another person or obstruct the prosecution or defense of another person knowingly commits one of the following acts. And I provided the statute link, and please go and read the statute. But it's when someone furnishes false information, they destroy, conceal, alter, or disguise physical evidence, or they plant false evidence. It's also when someone induces a witness with knowledge or material something that's material to the prosecution, the defense, or the location of another to conceal themselves or leave the state. So in other words, getting a witness to leave the state when they would have been valuable to either the prosecution, the defense, or location of someone else. Leaving the state or concealing yourself when you have knowledge, material, on the subject at issue, on whatever's at issue in the case. And then if a parent, legal guardian, or caretaker of a child under the age of 13 reports materially false information to law enforcement, state's attorney, medical examiner, coroner, or some other governmental agency during the investigation of the disappearance or death of a child, and a lot of times that comes up in our Amber Alert cases where one parent takes a child from another, or in violation of a court order regarding custody. The crime of obstructing justice encompasses a wide range of behaviors you may not immediately think of as a crime. For instance, obstructing justice includes telling a witness of a crime not to come to court to testify. In a domestic violence situation, the victim and the defendant almost always had a romantic or family relationship. If the defendant were asked the victim not to come to court to testify against him or her, this could be grounds for an obstruction of justice charge. Another example would be providing a police officer with a false name. Sometimes individuals with a suspended license or an outstanding warrant provide an officer with false information out of fear of going to jail. This constitutes obstruction because it's furnishing false information that hinders the investigation of a crime. If a witness knowingly conceals evidence that could allow a defendant to prove his or her innocence, that's also obstruction. Obstruction's currently a Class 4 felony with a fine of up to $25,000. However, the judge does have the option to sentence someone to probation as opposed to incarceration. Bribery. Under Illinois law, there are a number of ways in which somebody can be charged and convicted of bribery. You can be found guilty of bribery in Illinois if you have the intent to influence the performance of any act related to the employment or function of a public officer, public employees, a juror, or a witness. Those are our categories, right? Those are the people who can be bribed. A public officer, a public employee, a juror, or a witness. Ways in which someone may carry out this intent: promise to tender property or personal advantage to an individual who cannot lawfully accept the property or personal advantage. Promise the same to an individual believed to be a public officer, public employee, juror, or witness who cannot lawfully accept the property or personal advantage. Promise those things to someone who can't lawfully accept the property or personal advantage, causing another person to influence the performance of any act to the employment or function of any public officer, public employee, juror, or witness. You can't unlawfully receive, retain, or agree to accept any property or personal advantage if you're in those categories. You can't solicit, receive, retain, or agree to accept any property or personal advantage on an understanding that he or she will improperly influence or attempt, so even attempt, to influence the performance of any act related to the employment or function of anybody in those classes. Now, Illinois' bribery law can be confusing because the language of the statute can apply to a variety of conduct. In simpler terms, bribery is the act of giving or receiving something in exchange for another individual's actions to influence other conduct. Some of the conduct that fits within this definition may seem minor. Some examples of bribery that help paint a clearer picture include, but may not be limited to, paying a public official such as a governor in exchange for the governor's decision to veto a bill or to make an appointment. See Rod Blagojevich. Giving a prosecutor St. Louis Cardinal season tickets in exchange for dismissal of a criminal charge. Paying for and or taking public employees on a vacation in exchange for the employee's promise to manipulate certain official documents or give an advantage, and say a contract. Providing a judge's child a job in exchange for a judge's promise to rule a particular way in a pending civil or criminal proceeding. Again, none of these are minor, and it should be fairly clear. And if it's not, really review this, because some of you will be subject to background investigations that include polygraph examinations and psychological examinations, and this is a character thing, right? Perjury, one that's especially important for people that may be called to testify. I linked the Illinois perjury statute, and perjury is providing a false statement on an official document, lying under oath, or lying to law enforcement officers. It is not just in the courtroom that a person can be charged with perjury. Depositions taken under oath in a civil matter or statements to an investigator are subject to perjury. Perjury can come from any form of sworn statement. Now, not every false statement will be a crime. There are specific conditions that have to be met for a false statement to be considered perjury, as opposed to a statement made in confusion or from a different perspective. The crime of perjury requires proof that the person did the following. One, they made the false statement. Two, they knew the statement was false. Three, the false statement was material to the issue or point in question. And four, the statement was made under oath or affirmation in a proceeding or in any other matter where, by law, the oath or affirmation was required. There are some defenses available to perjury. First, when a contradictory statement is made during the same continuous trial, as long as the offender admits to the falsity of the contradictory statement, those making the statement will be protected from prosecution. Some other defenses are belief that the sworn statement was true, genuine impairment of memory, and mistake. Now, for those of you who had my evidence course, you know who gets to decide whether it was a genuine sworn statement, or whether it was a genuine belief that the sworn statement was true, or there was a genuine impairment of memory, or it was a mistake, right? The judge. So the judge essentially weighs the credibility of that person and the circumstance. In addition to fines and a prison sentence, a conviction of perjury has other lasting effects. Perjury is considered a crime of moral turpitude, and you could lose or be denied professional licensure, for instance. A lawyer, a certified police officer, and some public service occupations. You can be disqualified from those positions and from security clearances. A non-citizen convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude is generally ineligible to receive relief from deportation and is frequently barred from reentering the U.S. And be aware, convincing someone else to commit perjury is also an offense. The law makes it a Class 4 felony to persuade another person to make a false statement in violation of our state's perjury law. And for those of you who have had evidence and those of you who will take it, remember, any circumstance of being untruthful, and especially conviction of anything related to your ability to tell the truth, can be brought up generally in anything else that happens in the courthouse that you're involved in, and it will follow you around. So don't do it, right? Don't do it. And for those of you going into law enforcement, you have two advantages. Number one, almost everything that you're ever going to testify to is going to be subject to a report that you've written, hopefully shortly thereafter, after the incident or the thing that you'd be called to testify on. And you're going to be allowed to review your report. So stick to your report. You're also going to have the advantage of, in the event that you can't remember, and it's always okay when testifying to say, I can't remember, if you actually can't remember. But as opposed to the lay witness, when you can't remember, you're going to be able to use your report to refresh your recollection, to help you remember. Most witnesses don't get that. And most witnesses fall into a trap of, even if they genuinely have an impairment of memory, start talking and provide information that they're not sure of, which may lead to them being found liable for perjury. Last topic, Homeland Security. It's on the syllabus, and you know, I struggle with whether we should even continue to talk about it. You know what it is. You know where it falls. You should know, and I link the annual report about Homeland Security in Illinois. The main thing to know is that we have statutes that essentially facilitate coordination with the federal agencies that are in charge of all the things related to Homeland Security. For obvious reasons, after 9/11, we learned that one of the problems that we had in this country was a lack of integration of our systems. Our systems weren't talking to each other. And so it essentially seeks or hopes to promote cooperation amongst our various law enforcement agencies, from the smallest and most local all the way up to the largest and most federal, when it comes to Homeland Security. And the intent there is to, A, prevent any incidents like that in the future, and B, in the event that anything happens that leads to a threat or a concern with our Homeland Security, that we facilitate the investigation, prosecution of those events. This concludes the weeks 11 and 12 podcast. Again, I hope you listen to all parts. I hope you go back and listen to at least the week 12 part after. It's not going to hurt you to do that. Stay well, stay safe. If you need me, you know where to find me.